I want to dive into the culinary scene. That's one of the many things that we do here on Culture Shift, is give you a seat at the table of everything that's happening in what is increasingly an incredible food scene here in Metro Detroit. Now, pop-ups are a big part of that. We talk about them all the time here on the show. Sometimes you can find a young chef, something a little more exciting than you see at long-established brick and mortars at these emerging pop-ups. And we're excited to have one of those pop-up owners here with us today, Miriam Khan, the chef and owner of Khana Detroit. Welcome to Culture Shift.
Thank you.
We're also joined by Mark Kurliancik, at this point, friend of the show. He's also a food writer, documentary filmmaker, and editorial director at Frame. Mark, welcome back to Culture Shifts.
Thanks for having me back, Ryan.
Now, Frame and Frame Bar in Hazel Park is currently where Khana Detroit is stationed, because maybe people don't know this. You are a pop-up that travels around Metro Detroit, right, Miriam?
So exactly.
Go ahead, set the table, if you will, for what Khana Detroit is all about and this business model that you've built.
So Khana Detroit is a pop-up, which means we do not currently have a brick and mortar. We never have. We've been fortunate enough to function out of businesses that have invited us into their homes to take over their space, whether it's a bar, a fully functioning restaurant, or a music venue, where we essentially set up for the night, provide service the way you would get it at a pickup restaurant. So you walk up, put your food order in, and within a few minutes, we give you your food and you enjoy it in the space. Being in Frame Bar is a little different because we have an entire restaurant to our availability. So we're running the entire kitchen line every day of the week with the exception of Monday and Tuesday. And the entire dining area is dedicated to us as well. So people are coming in and getting an entire serviced restaurant experience for the first time ever in Khana history.
And how long is that history at this point?
It is about 3 years, a little over 3 years. We started in September 2018, and we've been going since. So I think that will be 4 years this September.
I'm excited to get into the menu, but I want to talk about that moment, that epiphany, where you said, I'm going to start my own restaurant, essentially. I would imagine it's probably started out of your house at first, right?
It did.
Yeah. So what was that moment where you said, I'm going to take on this very entrepreneurial dream?
So there were a couple moments where this came to fruition until it actually landed as a solid, I'm going to do this. The first moment that I thought that I wanted to do something with food was actually when I was 16 in my parents' home as a teenager who would come home late at night after hanging out with friends. My mom would always leave food out for me to eat at my own accord. So I came home one night and she had this shrimp masala that she would make all the time. And there were these Hawaiian sweet buns that my dad is currently also obsessed with. Some of her homemade chutney. And I kind of just like started poking around. And at the time, as much as I appreciated the food, I was sick of it, of eating Pakistani food all the time. So I was always trying to eat Americanized food. So I put the masala on these Hawaiian sweet buns, mixed some mayonnaise with the chutney, used this like pickled salad my mom would always make and have at the dinner table, and basically made a shrimp masala slider. And I was standing there eating it at like 2 a.m. And I'm like, wow, this is something crazy. Like, no one's making this food, but people need to try this. And in that moment, I knew I was onto something, but I was 16. So like, what am I going to do with that, you know? But I kept eating food like that. And then one day, flashback to like 3 years ago, I'm talking with Carlos, who was the former partner of mine in Khana, and we were just going back and forth about what we wanted to go forth and do. And I told him I had this like crazy idea to kind of put my food forth and do like a fun little food pop up. And he was like, yo, you should totally do it. Like, I have the availability to like get people in on this. We can go find a space and we should just do a pop up for fun. And we did. And that was on September 5th, I think, of 2018. We went to Keesling. We did a pop-up. There was a line going through the patio, through the building, out the door. We sold out within 2 hours, and we just didn't stop. And now I'm here.
That's where we start to see some of the cultural divides. At 16, I was probably coming home to ants on a log, right? Like peanut butter and celery and raisins. You're coming home to shrimp masala. Very different menu from what I grew up in my household. Can you tell me a little bit about your background and the type of food that was being cooked there that has influenced very much Kana, Detroit?
Oh, yes. So much food. So I would come home every day. My mom had fresh, she worked every single day of the week. She worked like a 9-to-5 every day, but she still found time to make dinner. So there was always some sort of masala, whether it was like pindi masala, which is okra, one of my favorites. We ate a lot of like goat stews, a lot of chicken, beef, just like really spice heavy stews basically is what we were eating. And there was always like a flatbread roti type deal. Always rice on the table. If you're a Desi, if you're Asian, basically, there's always rice on the table. So just a lot of like really heavily spiced food. I would go to school every day and get made fun of for smelling like a spice rack. So just very pungent, delicious, fresh food that at the time I was sick of eating and I hated. That now I'm like, wow, I'm so happy I didn't have to grow up. No offense to anyone who grew up in these households, but I didn't grow up in a household eating meatloaf. Like I was eating this rich food that is so full, like packed with history, basically, these spices that I took for granted. And yeah, that's kind of just what was normal to me.
It shows a little bit of how this menu's come to be for you, because mm-hmm. as a first generation immigrant, you're wrestling with the food that's in your home, right? But looking at American culture at the same time. So right. There's some frustration there. And you come up with something like butter chicken nachos that appear on the Kana Detroit menu. Can you talk about that juxtaposition of kind of what we would consider Americanized cuisine versus your background with Pakistani food?
Yes. So the food is very representative of who I am as a person. I'm a first-gen American, Pakistani, daughter to Pakistani immigrants, born and raised here. The food is inherently Pakistani, but it's always in like an Americanized vessel. It's something weird, like we make the Slappin' Joe, which is keema. Keema is a Pakistani stew made with ground beef, traditional spices. And I turn that into a Sloppy Joe and just put it on a bun with the chutney aioli that we put in everything. And the food is basically that. It's like the core of it is a Pakistani dish, but it's retranslated into the food that I grew up eating in America that made me feel like I was part of the fabric of this culture, which is cool because back then I was really ashamed of my culture. I was really like, I got made fun of for this food. I would come to school with like noodles my mom made that were greasier than everyone else's because we put oil and stuff and it wasn't spaghetti. It was like curry noodles, basically. And now I'm so proud of that. And I'm getting to mix it up with the culture that I grew up embracing, which is American culture. And, you know, at the core of it, I was an American kid in a Pakistani household. So it's cool to have food that represents both things that were inherent to who I was and who a lot of people like me can say they are today.
And you're no longer being made fun of it. You're being praised for it.
I'm being praised for it and paid for it, which is pretty cool.
Go ahead and pull that poll quote out of there. You've been called one of the best 50 street food eateries in the world by an online publication called Urban Adventures.
Yes.
How does that feel, this journey that you've been on? You know, you talked about it being difficult at one time, now being celebrated and in the most sort of traditional restaurant setting. You've seen this thing grow mm-hmm. year in, year out. So how does that feel for you as an entrepreneur and a chef?
It feels insane and also very calming. I feel like I'm in control of every aspect of it, which is very comforting to someone like me who is a control freak. I love that people are embracing a culture that is often overlooked. And for a while in my life was, you know, like I said, I've said three times now, I grew up being made fun of for it. And, you know, times have changed a lot. It's cool to be from a different cultural background. It wasn't always that way. Even for someone like me, who's only at the end of her 20s, like when I was younger, it was not okay to be a brown kid for a lot of people. So it's really awesome to see publications embracing Desi food, and not only just like the Desi food we're used to eating. You know, Indian food has always been amazing, but Pakistani food hasn't really been able to shine because Pakistan hasn't even been a country for 100 years. So for the food to be something that I can celebrate and share with people is really, really special to me.
And there's also not only expectations outside of the home, but you've talked about expectations that you had inside of the home, too, mm-hmm. of what might be considered a traditional route for first-generation immigrant child to go through or do coming from the background that you're from.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So for someone like me, it's pretty typical for you to be expected to go to college, get your degree in either the medical field or to be an engineer, and then get married and cast that degree away so that you can become a mother to the children that you're expected to have by the time you're like 25. And this is something that was an expectation for me when I was growing up by my parents. And, you know, they were just doing what they were told was the way to run their lives, their entire upbringing in Pakistan. So for me to challenge all of that and go against the grain, it was very frustrating for them and also for me because I was just trying to live my life. And for a long time, I butted heads with my whole family. We didn't have the best relationship. But at the end, today, it's been a learning experience not only for me, but also for them. And they're so supportive of everything I do now. And my mom is so proud of me. She's like, oh, my God, I've raised this independent daughter. And she, like, brags about me to her friends, which is crazy. And they're proud of it, too. Like, to see someone from the Islamic Pakistani culture to be representing our culture in a way that isn't tied to the way we've built the status quo, I think is important for people like me to have a voice and to show, like, the other women out there who are feeling oppressed that, like, it's possible for you to pave your own way, but also embrace all the beautiful parts of our culture that we have been so tied to all of our lives.
That is Maryam Khan, the chef and owner of Khana Detroit, which is currently serving up their menu at Frame Bar in Hazel Park now through February 6th. They're there Wednesday through Sunday, opens at 5 o'clock. You've got the backstory behind it. The menu is incredible and delicious. Excited to have her in studio with us. And we're also joined by Mark Kurliancik, food writer, documentary filmmaker, and editorial director at Frame. And Mark, you actually had a chance to write about this thriving pop-up scene here in Metro Detroit for Scene Magazine last year. What did you learn about this pop-up scene in Detroit?
Yeah, I mean, I've always sort of been a fan of it. Previously, as a restaurant critic at the Free Press, I was going to a lot of pop-ups, and just that's a way that you could sort of keep tabs on maybe what was coming and what was next. But I think during the pandemic, over the last two years now. So many of the traditional restaurants have sort of either limited their hours almost to resemble pop-ups in a way, the amount of service that's there is so limited. Like the traditional restaurants almost became pop-ups, and the pop-ups filled in a lot of those gaps for, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesdays, the slower days, especially with the difficulty of just retaining staff. And, to have somebody who is a chef and an entrepreneur and who is coming into a place on a Monday or Tuesday and, bringing their own following to a place, it was such a collaborative spirit between the pop-ups and the sort of traditional restaurants and bars that it was just really inspiring. I was a fan of Khana before I wrote about them. Then I got to write about them and hear, basically what Miriam's just told you. And it was just so inspiring. So when I started at Frame, I was like, well, who else would be better suited for a place like this where they've been doing these weekly or twice a week pop-ups, but now let's take them to sort of the next level. Let's get them ready for a brick and mortar where now they can sort of run through the cadence of service in a restaurant and learn what it's like to order for 5 days of service versus 1 day of service. And you can't just run out of food and be done that day because there's still people coming in. So the opportunity that Frame Bar kind of to bring in the pop-up scene and to allow it to sort of get to the next level is what I'm really excited about, that particular space.
Breaking down the idea of the pop-up, it seems like the reason this has really resonated and become more of a legit option for chefs and entrepreneurs is that finding a brick and mortar and the capital to do that can be difficult. The idea of having to be there 7 days a week to be able to get the staff right now. We talk about staff shortages all the time as part of our service industry coverage. It seems like the pop-up model eliminates a lot of the roadblocks that would be getting in someone's way to be able to open up their dream restaurant oftentimes.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You don't even have to, you know, you don't need a real estate agent to host a pop-up or to cook a meal. And so, you know, at Frame and Frame Bar, really that entire operation is meant to be a space to support culinary talent and to get them to the next level and to be a place where, I mean, all we do basically is pop-ups and chef residencies. And so, you know, I like to think of it almost like a music venue where we book talent. Or, you know, when I'm, for me, it's even more important as a storytelling platform, as somebody who tells stories around food. I see it as like a live food magazine, and we really program it with the same way that we would a food magazine and think about it editorially. And so it's super exciting to allow young chefs, up and coming chefs, not necessarily just young chefs. I mean, anybody who's trying their hand at this, a space, a dedicated space for this, where they don't need to put up any money up front to get into this space. You know what I mean? We do the ordering of the food. We have a whole staff. We have a culinary director that kind of guides people through this. We have the entire framework for making this run successfully. And then the food and the talent just changes, and that keeps it really dynamic. And that's part of what's really great about the pop-up scene is, you know, even in the pandemic, it's just, people still want something new, and people are desiring to try things. You know, we can't travel as much, so a lot of the times our comfort or our travel and our exploration of the world comes through food. And so these pop-ups have made the scene so much more dynamic.
The one thing that's always mystifying to me is how ravenous the demand is for some of these pop-ups. Even a popular restaurant doesn't have lines out the door, or if you arrive by 6 o'clock, an hour after they open the doors, they say, oh, sorry, we sold out. It was just so busy today. What is the magic ingredient with some of these pop-ups where they become so popular so quickly, Mark?
Well, I think part of it is the scarcity, right? I mean, if you're popping up once a week and you've got 200 orders to sell, you know, and you're out, that sort of It plants a psychological implant in other
limited
people.
Edition.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, people know that it's limited, so you have to get out there, and so they'll wait in line for it. But it's also something that you can't get elsewhere, right? So you have to go to this place in a specific time. You know, a lot of times you have to follow the page's Instagram or whatever it is. You really have to become a fan in order to experience it. And so there's this real beautiful sort of community building that happens around this. Like even in the line, it's like, oh, have you had this food before? No, what should I order? You know, it's a great, like, I mean, really, especially now, it's like we all are craving, you know, these types of interactions with others, you know, that aren't just this digital sort of interaction. And so for it to start digitally on Instagram and you to follow a cool pop-up and then be able to really experience it in person and see, you know, hundreds of other people that are into it too is just like such a – I'm getting chills just like thinking about some of those experiences.
It also plays into that idea of social currency. I've been there. I've had it. Have you?
Yeah. Well, right. and it's new and what's next. You know, everybody wants to be a little bit ahead of the curve. And so if you want to be ahead of the curve of what's coming, you know, to Detroit area dining, it's like the best place to look is the pop-ups, because that's where a lot of these, you know, the great brick and mortar of the next year or two is going to start in one of these pop-up sort of locations. And so if you want to be ahead of the curve, that's the way to do it.
What is it about the pop-up model that we often do see more diversity, a wider range of more adventurous dishes? Not to knock any brick and mortar restaurants out there, it does seem that they are a little more forward thinking or more exciting, or things I don't tend to see on menus in Metro Detroit. What is the reason for that?
Yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of it. I mean, it's because A, it's not one single point of view that's coming through on the plate. And not that, you know, not that brick and mortar restaurants are one single point of view. I mean, we've often sort of elevate chefs beyond the level that they deserve. I mean, it's a team that puts that food out. But still, when you have, you know, at Frame, we have a Nigerian pop-up coming up. We've got a Cajun Creole pop-up coming up. We've got, you know, Pakistani out front. We've got, Italian coming. It's just, it's always different. And because it's, a lot of the pop-ups are sort of set menus where it's not like, what we do at Frame is like we list the menu ahead of time. And if you want to eat that food, you'll come out. If you don't, you'll wait for another event. And so the chefs then are really trying to often experiment with something that they can't do either in their you know, brick and mortar, or they're introducing something completely different to the market. I mean, that's kind of the whole point of the pop-up, is the pressure, the financial pressures are so much less. You don't have, you know, the utilities to pay, or the, you know, the liquor order. And especially like at Frame, we do that all for these chefs.
Miriam, I'm curious, does the pop-up model end up becoming a runway for takeoff into a brick-and-mortar business? Is that where you see this going?
That's an idea that I often toy with, actually. There was a point in time where I was completely opposed to that idea because a brick and mortar is kind of terrifying. My entire life, I've been led to believe that owning a restaurant is the most psychotic thing that you can put yourself through.
Yep.
And to this day, I toy with that. And eventually, I think I do want to have an established brick and mortar, because I think it would be a waste for me to not put everything I have forth into the ultimate achievement, which in this case is a brick and mortar. But I wonder if there's a landscape we haven't breached yet with the pop-ups. Is there a creative outlet that these pop-ups can continue to inch towards that hasn't yet been determined? And that's something that I wonder if I can help be a part of developing. I don't know what it is yet. But I'd like to think that there's more than just owning a brick and mortar, because pop-ups are so exciting for what they are. And everything you've said is true, Mark. You know, like we get to change everything on the flip of a dime. I can switch my entire menu. I can add something new tomorrow if I wanted to. And having a brick and mortar, you don't have that luxury. You have to make sure your orders are all intact, and it's just like a very exciting thing, and I'd hate to think that I have to fall into line with the one thing that has terrified me my entire life. So here's to hoping that there's some weird, unexplored landscape that is in the works, and all these pop-ups are just helping to facilitate that.
The story behind this food is really incredible. It's very personal for you, and I appreciate mm-hmm. you sharing that with our listeners here on Culture Shift. What are you hoping people take away when they try some of your food at Frame Bar?
I guess I just want them to know that this food is so like exciting. It's always been exciting. I'm not really creating anything that hasn't, I mean, I guess I can't say that. I like to think I'm doing something that hasn't been done before, but it's coming from hundreds of years of recipes that have been passed down through families. Like Pakistan used to be a part of India. So like hundreds of years here, we're talking thousands. But I want them to taste the heart and soul that I put into it, that my team puts into it. Like, these are very personal recipes. A lot of them are things that we've all workshopped. Like, my right-hand woman, Victoria, who's with me in the kitchen all the time, she has this, like, she always comes in with these weird tostadas or, like, a vessel, and she'll just, like, throw something together and be like, I made a carne burrito today. Try it. And then we've put stuff on the menus based on the weird stuff we make in the back. So I guess I just want people to know that this food is exciting, and it's constantly shape-shifting and changing into something new, and that they can stay tuned because it will never be what it was yesterday.
Whenever we talk about food on Culture Shift, I like to really be very cruel and try to make mouths water
that.
Out there. Mm. So can you describe this Pakistani fish and chips?
Yes.
Just really go in, just tease people, because it's time for lunch. So I want them to start thinking about what they're going to be eating.
Okay, here we go, everyone. The Pakistani fish and chips. I take a cod fillet. I'm going to stop with the voice. It's getting weird.
It was great.
It is Atlantic cod that is marinated in a ginger garlic paste that I make with at least 7 spices, which I will never reveal. It's marinated for at least 4 hours, which is getting on the cusp of when it's just too long for fish because it starts to break down, but it doesn't. It is then drenched in, before it's fried, right before it's fried, it's battered in a rice flour that is also mixed in with a bunch of spices, deep fried, so that it is still flaky and melt in your mouth, perfectly done when it comes out. It's served alongside naan chips that are also fried and tossed in a blend of savory sweet spices. and then served with a tartar sauce that is made with yogurt and dill, cucumber, and a lot of refreshing citrusy flavors. So it's meant to be savory, refreshing, and decadent all at the same time.
I think we have accomplished our mission here. Miriam Khan, chef and owner of Khana Detroit. If you want to check this place out, you've got some time. Their menu is now at Frame Bar in Hazel Park, now through February 6th. You can go Wednesday through Sunday. They open at 5 o'clock. It's been called one of the best 50 street food eateries in the world. Miriam, thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we are also joined by Mark Kurlianchik, longtime food writer, documentary filmmaker, and editorial director at Frame. He's also written about the pop-up food scene and is responsible for bringing Khana to Frame. And I'm sure you'll be coming back to talk about other exciting things you have on that menu in the future.
I hope you'll invite me back, Ryan. Thanks for having me.
This is Culture Shift here on WDET.